Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. And we're speaking tonight to Rashid Sarwar. He's the representative of UNICEF in Malaysia and Brunei. UNICEF is going to be launching its report on the online lives of children in Malaysia, Cambodia, Thailand and Indonesia. And, you know, before the break, Rashid, we talked a little bit about this report, the Our Lives Online report. You talked about the recommendations this report will be making, engaging parents and government stakeholders. Who else is missing from that equation?
One of the key partners is the internet service providers who provides the space for the children. And that's what the business people as well, because we would like them that they really protect the identity of children much better, and they generate few level of protection mechanism so that that when children are in the space, they are barred by others to come in.
So these are the Googles, the Yahoos, the YouTubes of the world?
As well as the local providers well.
Rashid, you know, I understand a lot of us are focused on the, you know, predatory practices of a sexual nature. That seems to scare a lot of people. It causes, in fact, hysteria sometimes around the internet space. But I wonder about the other things that kids get influenced by. And I want to tap, I mean, on your experience, about that children are also constantly bombarded with commercials and calls for them to be good consumers and, you know, the whole range of other things that influence them as human beings. And I wonder if that's a concern of that UNICEF has, beyond the question of, you know, vulnerability to sexual predators. Is there a broader understanding by UNICEF about what kids, how kids are being shaped in this contemporary world, and what other dangers might be out there?
I mean, we have to give them a proper space when the children is online studying. We really need to make sure that they are not attracted or distracted by something else, like a nice commercials of, oh, there is something that new iPhone came out. Then the online class and an iPhone, I think that the attraction is diverted. So we really need to pay much more attention on child development, education, psychological support and all these things. And here the commercial people, those business people could come in a very, very good hand and make sure that the children learn with the proper attention.
Yeah, but there's the question is whether there's a slight conflict of interest. I mean, I understand national governments have their agendas, maybe much more propagandistic or nationalistic. Parents, of course, will have their own personal agendas. But when it comes to corporates are driven by profit, right? And so the question is, how do you make corporates pull back on this instinct to constantly turn individuals into consumers?
Children into consumers.
Yes. No, I mean, very, very easy. It's an investment case, because if you have a proper educated citizen, they will buy proper product in 10 years' time. So you are investing not to disturb them now, to make them more smart. And that's what the business want, a smart population, smart citizen of the country. So, I mean, I think that this is a very smart decision not to intrude their education time.
Okay, I think there's a huge debate there about whether corporates want smart consumers. But okay, I mean, I will leave it at that.
But on that note, if I may ask, you know, in anticipation of releasing this report, are you expecting any pushback or anyone to dispute the findings of the study?
I think that we don't expect any dispute, but if there are further clarification needed, we will be happy to provide in any arena in with you or with anybody else.
Brilliant. Okay, and if I may, I want to talk a little bit about the impact of the COVID-19 crisis on children, not just on the lives of children in cyberspace or online, but also the fact that this has become a child rights crisis, right? So it's really quite interesting the way to look at how governments have been, whether they have or have not been putting children at the center of policy making. And I want to ask you about the impact of COVID on children beyond, you know, the health impact. How has UNICEF been tracking? What have you found of the impact of this pandemic and its lockdown on children in this past few months?
You know, this is this is the crisis that we are having that we never seen last 30 years. Mm. And the impact of COVID-19 are multidimensional. So I mean, for the sake of time, I will say a few of them that are long-term impacting children. One is that education and access to education. COVID has made vulnerability in terms of economic vulnerability. The research shows that less the bottom 40 families may not have enough capacity to provide proper online education facilities, mm-hmm. devices, or proper internet connections. So this is education is access to proper education is hampering. Mm. We talk about health, as myself as a doctor, as you said, and my journey to UNICEF has been a lot on health and nutrition aspect of the children in many, many countries mm-hmm. in the world. We found that being long time staying at home, and not necessarily that bottom 40 has a bigger mansions, mm-hmm. And also the access to the friends, and being continuous staying on the cyberspace, that's made children restless, depressions, and the mental health issues, psychological issues, which is a global phenomenon now, not only in Malaysia, but globally we are very concerned about the psychological and mental health for adolescents and children. That's one of our concerns.
Can I ask you, Rashid, I mean, philosophically, I mean, does UNICEF see national governments as the primary agent for correcting or compensating when we have a crisis, or planning long term? Or do you also leverage on markets and corporates? And, you know, what is the balance in UNICEF's own thinking, underscoring its own recommendations when it thinks about empowering or securing the rights and the context of conditions of children?
I mean, we should be all together here. There's no, it's not only government will have to do. Government can, of course, provide better financing for the most vulnerable children. Government can provide better access to health and education, but it's a parents who have to also prioritize children and children's agenda. We have the business, we have the commercials, we have the employers who will have to also help those parents who are not making the proper income, mm. maybe the assistance, so that that assistance goes to the children's agenda. I mean, we talk about child-friendly or family-friendly businesses. That's a big discussion we can have somewhere else, but that's a fascinating discussion about how a business can be family-friendly. But this is very important because there is a direct impact to the children, and of course the nutrition, because we are very happy that we have got a good understanding with the government on nutritional status of the children, and there are concerns there, and COVID didn't help there mm. at all, because low income, less protein, more carbohydrates, and that not helping, and the nutritional status is low. And you know that nutrition is brain development. Nutrition is healthy body, mm. healthy body, healthy mind. So all is a proper cycle. So that's why it's we have to be all together on that. A business there, a parents, the government, our population, everybody has to be in this recovery process.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break, but more on this in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned.